You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Today is Wednesday, January 16th, and welcome to episode 2 of the Wells Tech Podcast. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we're your hosts for this half hour of Tech in Ministry Talk. Well, Sally, we made it through our first Wells Tech Podcast last week. Any impressions or reflections on our first venture into the brave new world of podcasting?
Yeah, just excited to come out with no major scars, no.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, I think we're both scarless, exactly. That was maybe our personal goals, numbers 1 and 2. We did receive some nice feedback from listeners, which we'll share a little bit later in the show. If you'd like to participate in the show or help us make it better, which we're always interested in doing, there are a number of ways to do that. We talked about them in our last show at the end. We'll put it at the front end of the show for those of you that didn't make it all the way to the end of our last show, and hopefully you can this week. Most of the information, in fact, all of the information about our show and about how to contribute to the show is on our website, wellstech.wells.net. You can leave comments there. You can read about previous shows. You can listen to previous shows. We also have an email address, wellstech@wells.net. And, of course, those not familiar with the Wells is with one L, stands for Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. We also have a voicemail line, 414-375-2334. If you want to point us in the direction of some interesting articles, websites, tools, etc., you can do that via Delicious. That's a social tagging network at del.icio.us. Just use the tag WellsTech, WellsTech. Sally and I check that every week to determine, you know, if anybody out there is pointing us in the direction of some new and exciting things that you'd like us to talk about. We also have a space on Facebook. Just do a search on Wells Tech in the group section. You'll find us there. And last but not least, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, there is a Wells Tech listserv, which predates this show. Many of our Wells users have used it to ask technological questions. You can find more about this Wells Tech listserv on our wellstech.wells.net website, where you can subscribe, read previous posts, ask questions, or answer questions, etc., etc. So that's how you can get involved with the Wells Tech podcast. If you've listened to last week's show, you know that, like good Lutherans, we have a sort of liturgy that we follow. And that begins for us with a chat about a topic that we feel might be of interest to our listeners. It might be a concept or approach, it might be a particular tool, etc. Well, today it's all of the above, and something that has literally changed the way at least I work, in a positive way, of course, and that's mind mapping. It's not a new topic, it's actually been around for a long time, and I know you, Sally, have been using it for some time as well. I got hooked on it about 3 years ago listening to a podcast on productivity. It's a big thing within those circles because it truly is a time saver. It's an organizing concept. Where did you hear about mind mapping, Sally?
Actually, I think it was you, Martin, that showed me mind mapping the first time, and I was hooked immediately.
That shows you how excited I was about it when I heard about it. We use it a lot within the department here at the Synod Administration Building, and I'm kind of hooked on it. So let's spend a little bit of time talking about mind mapping in general. For those of you that don't know what mind mapping is, you can do a quick search for mind mapping on Google, and one of the first items that will come up is a Wikipedia note on it. And if you just go to that page, you're going to read all about it. And mind mapping, as I said, is not a new concept. It's really a concept. It's not necessarily something that's part and parcel to technology, but it's really a different way to organize your thinking. A mind map, just to start with the basic concept, is a diagram. And a diagram that's used to represent, you know, your ideas, your thinking around a particular topic. Some think it has starts way back in the 3rd century. It's become really popular lately. A British popular psychology author, Tony Buzan, has kind of claimed or ownership of the a concept or the mind map as it exists today. But really, it's in different kinds of industries. It's used in different ways. And it really plays off the concept of what's called radiant thinking, where you put a central or core topic at the center of a your map. You know, if you're using low tech, it would be a piece of paper, and I've seen some really very detailed mind maps done on paper where you put that core concept in the middle, and then around the outside at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, all the way around to 12 o'clock, are what are called subtopics, or different branches off of that same theme. And you can branch off of those branches, and you can use color codes and different kinds of devices that will help you think through a topic. The concept here is that it allows you to generate a map very quickly, and you capture ideas very quickly. And it tries to marry what I would call the right brain and the left brain styles of thinking. So it allows some creativity, and it's very different, at least in my mind, than the linear way that we take notes. You know, traditionally, we start from top to bottom, left to right, and we have to structure our thinking right off the bat. A mind map allows you to think in a little bit more creative fashion, a little more scattered fashion. You can put ideas down and then organize them later. And some of the technology tools that we're going to be using or going to be talking about and that we do use allow that to happen. And that's what I like most about it. I use it in a lot of different ways. Sally, what's been your experience with mind mapping so far?
Well, just to take off on one of the concepts you were just talking about, I'm a real right brain kind of person, but I enjoy the flexibility that mind mapping gives me, but I like the fact that I can also turn it into a traditional outline kind of display as well. So after I've done my creative work in a mind map, I can push a button and all of a sudden I have a nice Word document in an outline format, if that's what my true ultimate need is for the information. From an education perspective, using it in the classroom setting, mind mapping is similar to the concepts we teach students for essay preparation. I've heard it called webbing before, where they do this same kind of central topic and all the different branches off the central topic to fully explore the concepts they want to present in an essay or a report or whatever. We've used it recently in our school for some project planning. We were working on a Christmas video project, and I just did some flat-out brainstorming with the students. What kind of scenes do we want to have? What characters do we need? Who's going to do what part of the project? That kind of thing. And we were able to just really quickly and visually plan out this entire video project, and the kids enjoyed the process as well. It's easy to use, quick to learn, very intuitive, and my students from fourth grade up are using it in our computer lab setting.
It's really become extremely popular within corporate circles. Most of the Fortune 500 companies do training in mind mapping, and a lot of the, especially research and development areas where they're brainstorming a lot, use this tool or tools like it to some great degree and some great success. One of the things that is intriguing to me is the ability to do things rather quickly, and then some flexibility to move things around once you've really got those things captured. Some of the uses around here are like I mentioned, brainstorming, note taking, and meeting management are really great aspects of some of the tools that are out there, especially on the to be able to use these on the technology side. Even for presentations, I've used some of these tools for in place of PowerPoint. It allows a little bit more flexibility. It's not just the same old screen after screen. There's some dynamic nature to it. If you're doing a presentation and you want audience or student feedback, you have the ability to insert that in line into the mind map itself. I have used this for sermon outlining and sermon studies. I do preach occasionally here in the Senate Administration Building on our chapel morning on Wednesday mornings, and I preach right from the mind map itself. It's a great outlining tool and kind of visual representation. I've heard of the mind map also referred to as a graphical organizer, at least in educational circles. So it's a good way to at one fell swoop, look at a mind map and kind of grasp the weight and the width of the topic. So there's a lot of ultimate uses for it. We've talked a little bit about tools, Sally. How do you get your hands on some of these technology tools that use the concept of mind mapping?
Well, I'm going to point you to several of them in the show notes for today's show. Two of the ones that we have the most experience with are on opposite ends of the spectrum. One is a free product. It's called FreeMind, and you can find that at freemind.sourceforge.net. It's Java-based. You can easily download it and install it. That's what we're using at our computer lab at school because of the price, obviously. You can't beat that. And it has all the basic functionality of mind mapping, allows you to get up and going very quickly. A fee-based product that we're really hooked on at the Senate Administration Building is by a company called MindJet, and the product is called Mind Manager. You can find it at www.mindjet.com, and they do have academic pricing, which also is for nonprofit organizations, starting at $149 for the professional version. They have a blog as well, so I'll point you to some resources from MindJet in our show notes. And then finally, I also came across 100-plus mind mapping tools and resources list on the Bootstrapper blog, which is just a blog that I read regularly. It's a really exhaustive list, has everything from tutorials, articles, videos, blogs about mind mapping, books about mind mapping, pretty much everything you want to know about mind mapping. And I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well.
I mentioned the Wikipedia article. There's just great resources there as well. One of them is essentially the steps to create or structure a mind map. There's 10 points that Tony Bazan has outlined there. So we'll be sure to include those in the show notes as well. If you go to any bookstore, you're going to find a number of books on this concept as well. One of the suggestions that I'd make to anybody interested in using this kind of tool with the technology that's available is just download one of the free ones. Even MindJet's mind mapping or mind manager software has a free 21-day trial if you want to download that. There, one thing that I really liked right out of the box is they're really easy to understand. You don't need to read a lot of directions. You don't need a manual, in essence, to try this out. You just start typing, and you hit the insert key or the enter key, and you're creating a mind map. Lots of different tools that you can use to add on to that to make those better. But if you're just looking to test it out, to kick the tires, as it were, to see what it's all about, real easy to do. So, you know, there's no cost to try it out, and I think there are lots of uses that our listeners might be able to find from using that. Check out those resources. Let us know your feedback, and we'd love to hear how you're, if you are using mind mapping technologies, we'd love to hear how you are using that in your particular area of ministry. So that's mind mapping in a nutshell, probably a little more than a nutshell. Next, we'd like to talk more about how the mind learns, and one of those ways that's becoming real popular these days is the concept of online or distance learning. We sat down a little bit earlier with professor at MLC, Jim Grinwald, to talk about distance learning. He's our Synod's Director of Distance Learning. So let's listen in as Jim talks to us about online learning and distance education. With us today is Professor Jim Grinwald from Martin Luther College. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on your show.
Jim, what is your official title? And exactly what does that entail at Martin Luther College?
Well, at Martin Luther College, I'm the Director of Academic Computing, which deals with software issues, getting professors up to speed on what they're doing, and also then the students as well.
And you hold another position, a synodical position, is it Director of Distance Learning, Distance Education?
Right. The Synod has basically bought up some of my time from the college for the last couple of years to serve as the Wells Director of Distance Learning.
And what are your responsibilities associated with that position?
The idea there is to have someone in the Synod to coordinate distance learning initiatives within the Wells so that someone knows what various entities are doing and can sort of cut down on duplication of efforts, also to serve as a resource person to others if they have questions about distance learning, and then to train and assist others as they begin to design and construct distance learning courses or modules.
How long have you been involved with distance learning?
It's probably close to 10 years now. As far as with the distance learning initiatives with the Wells, that's been going on for about 5 years.
We've been throwing around the terminology distance learning. What, as you define it, is distance learning?
Yes, distance learning probably comes from years ago when we had the independent study correspondence courses that would go out through the mail. Since that time, probably a preferred term might be online learning to distinguish it from the independent study type courses. Online learning then deals with the distance education via the internet. And the format there can usually be one of two types, a synchronous format or an asynchronous format. Synchronous is sort of like a chat room where you would have everyone log on at the same time and be communicating at the same time. Most distance education courses, however, are of an asynchronous format where the students simply log on, you might say, sometime during the week, work on the activities. They do have set things to get finished within the week. They have discussion forums to post to communicate with other students. And then also there might be some real-time chat sessions in there as well.
So it sounds like a real mix of technology, and I suppose as technology evolves with things like video conferencing and the like, distance learning will, the face of distance learning will change with it?
This is true. The reason the distance learning courses might not move as quickly as the technology would allow is that the student on the receiving end would have to have the capabilities to receive that video and so on without delays. And that's some problems. Currently, the bandwidth on the receiving end.
That kind of leads into one of my questions for you, Jim. What exactly is expected of those who enroll in distance learning? Not just the hardware, software kind of expectations, but does it take a special kind of student to be able to do this kind of coursework?
That's a good and common question that's often asked. Students should be self-disciplined and good managers of their time, since in a way you are somewhat independent on when you might get your work finished during the week. You don't want to save it all till the end, obviously. Also, they should be ready for both individual and group work. One thing that some people don't realize, there's an awful lot of group work, group discussion involved with distance learning courses. And sometimes students and professors have been known to say they get to know their students a lot better in a distance learning course than in a regular classroom where a student might just hide in the back corner.
Interesting. How are our Synod schools making use of distance learning?
On the high school level, some of them have been taking online courses from Martin Luther College. We offer several courses for college credit. Some of the high schools have also been taking courses online from other sources as well. Distance learning courses for high schools is probably changing the way advanced placement courses were handled in the past. So that's one movement. Another area, of course, at MLC, we're doing a lot with distance learning over the past years. We have the Synod Teacher Certification courses. There are a series of six religion courses. Those are all online. We also have courses for licensure renewal and early childhood education. Summer school courses online are quite popular with our regular students. They might pick up some courses to work ahead on the next semester. And probably the biggest development in the last couple of years has been the master's degree in education, which was put online. and that consists now of about 20 online courses. 3 or 4 of those are offered each semester, and currently we have about 50 students enrolled in that program.
Jim, the natural question I think asked by many is, what's the difference? What are you losing or what are you gaining moving from a classroom setting to a distance learning scenario? Are you gaining, losing anything? What are the differences?
Well, I think the biggest gains are sometimes for the students. For instance, the summer school courses are quite popular online because students do not need to come onto campus in order to take that course. So they can still be fulfilling their duties of their local congregation and at the same time working on their coursework. So that's probably the biggest advantage, making it easier for the students to access courses and also fill in all of the other responsibilities that they have at the same time. A disadvantage would probably be it's not as easy sometimes to know where the student is at in the course, or for the students sometimes maybe to understand exactly what the instructor intends that they should be doing. So it comes down to being very explicit in written instructions that are given out in the course itself.
So are there different skill sets needed than the traditional classroom setting as far as the teacher is concerned?
Yes and no. They always say someone who is a poor classroom teacher would probably be a poor distance ed teacher, too. So there are many overlaps in skills as well. One thing, as we mentioned, is good communication skills, usually written skills in particular, but oral skills, too, as you do communicate with the students via the phone or some other method. Also, along with that, good skills at just being able to read your students, knowing how to pay attention to subtle hints there might be as far as they're getting the material or not. These courses are taught with a course management system. Currently, we are using Moodle in the Synod to do that. And with that system, the instructor can tell when students have logged on, what materials they've had access recently. So in a way, it's not that difficult to tell if a student has even been into the course site or not.
Are these programs gaining in popularity? Do you see, where do you see distance learning going, both in general and within the Wells?
They are really growing. We were surprised at the number of students that enrolled in the master's degree program and our religion courses that are online in the summer. Often those fill up, and we need to put caps on those or offer a second section with them. Within the Wells, the latest emphasis is probably in the area of world missions. We have 2 training courses to train teachers to teach online and then to design and construct their online courses. And for the second year now, the majority of the students in those courses have been involved with world missions. So we're looking more at how this type of technology might be used by missionaries to help educate national church workers in various countries, and then also looking at using this type of technology for missionaries simply to reach out to individuals or small groups of people that might be in foreign countries as well, where we do not have the manpower currently in those countries or where the financial resources are not available.
Just another channel that the Lord is providing us to both train workers and to reach people. Do you see any use for distance learning or distance education at the congregation level?
With the congregation level, a common question I might receive is the use of online Bible studies. And that definitely is one avenue that could be pursued. Other avenues, Sunday school teacher training, I do believe that the Wells.net university site has some information up for that. And generally, short training type courses might be more appropriate for congregations to pursue. If the congregation does have its members spread out over great distances, then obviously this type of technology would even be more useful for them as well.
Sally, you're pretty heavily involved with Wells.net University. The programs that are offered there, Are those being used at this point? What kinds of programs do you see? That's really a distance learning platform as well, correct?
That's correct. We're actually running the same Moodle software that Martin Luther College is. And we do have the Sunday school teacher training as well as parenting training courses developed by the Commission for Youth Discipleship. And then there's also one online Bible study currently available from the Evangelism Commission through the What About Jesus website. So, and they have been used. There's online quizzes and discussion forums associated with each of those courses, and they are pretty active.
Do you have plans there in Sleepy Eye to use some of these tools, or are you using some of them already?
Actually, we have our own Moodle install here in Sleepy Eye, and we've begun using it, first of all, with our classroom setting, so that the kids in the computer lab are able to do different things on the Moodle site, take surveys and participate in discussion forums and things like that. But the idea would be to extend that to possibly an offshoot of our weekly Bible classes and things, keeping people connected during the week with a discussion topic of the week or something like that.
Jim, I assume you use the technology and are a teacher of some of these classes?
Yes, the two training classes, in fact, one is starting today, teaching online, three-credit course, as the title would imply, to teach people how to teach online and to give them an online teaching experience and learning experience as they go through the course. The second course that will be offered this summer is designing and constructing online courses. That course is set up for those teachers who are to the point of where they are ready to start creating a course. So we sort of work them through that process.
So you're teaching the teachers how to teach.
Correct. And then I have some other courses. I teach one of the courses to the high school students for college credit, a computer applications course. We've done that now for about 4 years, and that has gone very well as well.
Wonderful. Well, may the Lord continue to bless your work there at Martin Luther College, Jim, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
God's blessings.
Thank you.
Sally, it was good to talk to Jim. Jim, I think, has, as he mentioned, 10 years of experience within the distance learning space, and I think things are just getting started in that area.
Right. It's exciting to be involved in that type of initiative. Jim sent us links to his distance ed offerings at MLC, so we'll be posting those in the show notes.
The timing was really good on the Wells Tech listserv. There was a message that came in shortly after we did the interview, in fact, from Pastor Tim Wagner, who's looking to get into more of the online Bible study world. He obviously does the traditional Bible studies within his church, but his congregation is geographically dispersed, and they're looking for ways to introduce the Bible study concept in an online format. So he sent out a message to the Wells Tech listserv asking for guidance or suggestions or hints or tips and tricks on how he might be able to do that. In essence, he was looking for people with experiences using an online Bible study format, what tips they might have or suggestions as to how to use it, what experiences also that they have with kind of a book club format. He's interested in kind of going through a book and then discussing the contents of that particular book online. And Sally, I think there were some responses already to that question that he posed just yesterday.
Yeah, that's exciting to see the community supporting the questions out there. I think the main response that has come in so far is from Sue Fager from Grace in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. And she sent out a lot of great information, ideas about hosting your own discussion boards, blog, and even having a Moodle install, which we talked about in the interview with Professor Grunwald, using all of those different resources to do the online Bible study thing. So she had a lot of great ideas to share.
Again, if you'd like to get involved with that conversation, it's easy enough to do. Just go to the wellstech.wells.net podcast site, and you will be able to see all of the listings within that particular listserv. Shows you how to get involved. Just a great resource that has over 600 subscribers to it, so it's not surprising that a question that is asked like Tim did yesterday already has two really great responses. So get involved with that. Next up is our Tech Tidbits section, and first up to bat in that particular section of our show is what we call our picks of the week. Sally, you have a pick of the week.
I sure do, Martin. I had a rough week last week. I had some problems with my computer. It's just the thing that you don't want to happen. And it kind of drove home the point that we need to have good backups in place. If you've lived through a computer crash, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, it's time for you to get some backups in place so that you aren't harmed when your computer does go down. And so I did a little bit of research and came up with a good free alternative for doing system backups, and it's a product called SyncBack. It's available from twobrightsparks.com, and there's actually a freeware and a fee-based version of the software. You can use it for data backups. You can schedule your backups and do them on a daily or weekly or monthly basis, and it can do it to an external drive. It can do it over the network and even over FTP to an off-site server. And you can also use the software to synchronize data between two or more computers. So if you're a laptop and a desktop user and you want to keep your data in sync, this product will do that for you as well. I'll be posting a link in the show notes to a tutorial that I found on the lifehacker.com blog. Lifehacker is full of tech tricks, tips, and downloads for getting things done. And they have a high opinion of this SyncBack software and posted a tutorial out there. So if you aren't doing backups now, this is a good opportunity for you to get started and good software to use.
Is there a cost to SyncBack, Sally?
There's actually two different versions, a freeware version, no cost whatsoever, and that's what I've been using, and it's doing everything I need it to do. And they do have a fee-based version as well with some extra bells and whistles.
In your opinion, not needed, though? Or is there a limitation on the amount or the speed or the ability to schedule? What do you know what the real difference is between the two?
I just know that it has more flexibility as far as setting up your backups, but I've done some pretty exhaustive setups and scheduling with the freeware version, and it's working with everything I need it to do.
Obviously, it's important not just to find the software, but ultimately to set it up and use it. The best kind of backup software is the software that you set up once and you never have to worry about until you have a problem, and then you can go back, grab whatever it is that you lost. So you kind of have to do an analysis of what you can afford to lose. If you don't think you want to back up every day, you know, maybe it's every week, then you're making a decision that I can lose a week's worth of work. So it depends on how much you use your computer and what you use it for. But definitely there's stuff on your computer that you would want to back up, whether it's for personal or business reasons. There's reasons to have those backups, and Murphy's Law is definitely in play with computers big time. You know, things will fail. You know, computers do break down, and those of you that have used computers for any length of time know that bad things can happen, you know, just out of the blue, not through any act of your own, but technology just breaks. So make sure that you take a look at, if it's not SyncBack, other tools. Some tools come with your computer, so make sure that you're doing that. It's not the most glorious thing in the world, of course, but certainly, you'll miss it if you come to a point like Sally did where you need that backup and you don't have it. So that's Sally's pick of the week. My pick of the week is kind of mundane because it's been around for a long time, but it is really something that I use every day and we're actually using right now. That's how, those of you that listen to the first show know that Sally does not live here in Milwaukee where the Senate Administration Building is. She lives with her husband, who's a pastor in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, and we do this show via a technology called Skype, which is a VoIP technology, stands for Voice over IP. That's kind of a fancy term for the ability to speak or transmit our voices over the internet. Skype is a technology that has been around for, I'd have to do a little bit of research, but a long time. It was one of the first in the market, probably 3, 4, 5 years now, that allows two people or more than two people to talk for free, over the internet. There are millions of users on Skype at any one time. It basically works like a telephone. I called up Sally, for instance, before the show started. We had a little pre-production meeting. We talked about what we'd be talking about on the show, and then we basically are using it to converse. There are lots of different programs and varieties of the Skype technology. Skype is just one of many kinds of tools like this. Some of you have heard of Vonage. There are other free tools out there as well. The needs are pretty simple. You need a broadband connection. You typically need a headset with a microphone. And if you're going to use video, it does have free video conferencing or person-to-person video. You obviously need a webcam for that. We use it here in the Senate Administration Building. Every morning I have a staff meeting with my staff, my department heads, and we for 10 minutes we use Skype to discuss what's going on in the day and things that we need to communicate on. There are a bunch of different varieties of Skype programs, something called Skype In, which allows you to receive calls from the outside world for users who don't have Skype. There's a program called Skype Out, which allows me to place outbound calls to other landlines so that the person on the other end doesn't need to have Skype. Those do have a fee. There's also a voicemail component. There's all kinds of varieties. Prices range for Skype. If you're using like a Skype In connection, Skype In, actually there's a package, Skype In, Skype Out, and voicemail for $3 a month. You can buy Skype credit. So essentially if you're calling somebody within the United States who doesn't have Skype, so you're calling a business associate, you're calling another pastor or teacher who doesn't have Skype on their mobile phone or on their landline for about 2 cents a minute, so that's a lot cheaper than you can get through your phone company. You can receive a phone number that is personally yours. One nice feature is if there's somebody that you talk to a lot and you want to get a phone number that's a local call, so you've got grandma or grandpa or grandkids or brother or sister who's living in a different state, you can purchase a Skype In number that would be a local number for that particular person. So essentially it would be a local call for them, and you can talk just as if you were on that local call.
I use Skype In and Skype Out now for my work phone number and telephone calls, long distance service basically. I've had experience with friends who are in the Ukraine and talk to them for free for hours at a time over Skype, which is just incredible to talk to people on the other side of the world for free. And one that really sticks in my mind was at last year's Mission and Ministry Conference at the seminary when they did a video Skype call with Dr. John Lorenz. I think he was in Ukraine at the time, but he could see the seminary auditorium, and as people came up to speak to him on the microphone, he could identify them over video, and it was just an incredible experience to be a part of, and it was all done via this free technology, via Skype. So it's a great way to stay connected using the technology that's available to us.
Skype.com, SKYPE.com is where you can find more out about Skype. Just a great free tool that allows you to make free phone calls. You just need to have Skype installed on both ends. There's a PC version, a Mac version. I think there's even other platforms that are available. So if you're not aware of Skype, give it a try. It's free, and enjoy your free phone calls. That is our Picks of the Week segment. Next up is Wells.net, the Wells.net Feature of the Week.
Yeah, I'm excited to share with you today a great Bible reading feature. Northwestern Publishing House has a series called Through My Bible in 3 Years, and we've taken that series and adapted it for the web. So you can actually subscribe and read online or have delivered via email or RSS a daily Bible reading. And if you stick with the Bible readings for 3 years, you will have read the entire Bible in that 3-year time period. In addition, recently we've launched a podcast version of the Bible reading as well. So if you don't want to read it, you can listen to it instead. And it's delivered daily. You can subscribe and have it in your iPod before you wake up in the morning, just about, and listen as you are driving to work or whatever is convenient for you. There's RSS delivery of that feature as well. Both of these are available with an easy jump word on Wells.net. You can go to wells.net/jump/Bible3 to get the text version of Through My Bible in 3 Years, or alternatively, you can go to wells.net/jump/Bible3 podcast and get the audio version. And I encourage you to check it out. In 3 years, you will have read the whole Bible.
Yeah, the podcast version is just great. I download that each day, and on my way into work, I play that. So we've got about a year's worth, I think, of the audio podcasts available. So just an easy way. It's 5 to 7 minutes a day, whether you're listening or reading. So just a real simple way to get through the Bible. Just explore some areas that maybe you don't hear on traditional, you know, Bible readings on Sunday mornings, and a very nice program that we have set up. So certainly take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about a couple of things coming up that you might want to be aware of. One of those is for our teens, and that's a What Are You Doing This Summer chat. Living Bold, which is our website for teens at livingbold.net, sponsors these chats fairly regularly, I'd say maybe once a month. Pastor Rich Warnicke will be the host of this particular chat. He's an administrator for Wells Kingdom Workers Faith in Action, and he's hosting a chat on January 22nd at 8 p.m., I assume that's Central Time, entitled What Are You Doing This Summer for Our Teens? So just a chance for our teens to gather around to talk to each other about summer plans, maybe talk about the summer youth rallies that are going on. If you'd like to get involved, if you're a teen, www.wells.net/jump/chat. You can see that and the list of all the other upcoming chats. Again, that's January 22nd at 8 o'clock. So if you are not a teen and have one, make sure that they're aware of that. They have great participation and some interesting chats.
I also wanted to put a plug in for the upcoming Shepherd Staff training. Shepherd Staff is church management software, and it's developed by Concordia Technology Solutions, and we have developed our own training related to the membership and attendance modules of Shepherd Staff. And this is a kind of a unique training. We're going to be doing online distance ed for this Shepherd Staff training, just like we talked to Dr. Grunwald about. And it will be offered twice in the coming months, starting at the end of January for a 5-week time period, and repeated again beginning at the end of March, basically for the month of April. The cost for the training is $30, and it would be appropriate for anyone working with the membership and attendance modules of Shepherd Staff to attend this training. So check it out online at www.wells.net/jump/MAM for membership and more.
Thanks, Sally. Great opportunity. Those classes do fill up, so make sure that you get in early to reserve your spot. Next up is our community feedback section. As I mentioned at the top of the show, lots of ways to get involved, to suggest topics for us. Sally, what do we have this week for our community feedback?
Well, we were excited to get an email from Steve Mathwick. He's a member of St. John's Oak Creek in Wisconsin. And he just gave us some great suggestions for different topics we might cover in future shows, including how to subscribe and get MP3s on an MP3 player, how to do videotaping of sermons, from software solutions to getting it all the way onto your website. And then finally, he has some experience with live chats with World Mission Partners, and it might be something that we can tap into him in the future and learn more about their experience there at St. John's and how they've carried out these live chats. It sounded like a lot of interesting ideas, and we appreciate the feedback very much, Steve.
Yeah, Steve, keep those comments coming. And for all of our other listeners, as I mentioned at the top of the show, very easy to get in touch with us. Steve sent us an email at wellstech.wells.net. You can see all the other ways to get in touch with us and be a part of the show at wellstech.wells.net. Well, that's probably a wrap on our episode 2, Sally. We survived another one. Mm-hmm. As we end each show, we try to feature a Wells musician. Our Wells musician this week is Michael Schrader. His website is michaelschrader.com. We'll have his link in the show notes. Michael has produced 4 albums so far. Are they still called albums? You know, I'm probably showing my age at this point. You know, I don't know that they're on vinyl, but I know they're on CD. So take a look at Michael's website. The album that selection that we'll be playing today is Forgiveness is Grace from his album The Way. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
mostly happy is with the family in place. But Sam came a calling and somehow she's threatened. It took him years to forgive what he lost. He would find the way at the foot of the cross. And he said, let him without sin cast the first stone. Let the power of love carry you home. Cause for each of my sins, this life he would pay. Yeah, the one thing he taught me is forgiveness is a grace. When the headlights came and a drunken driver well crossed in her lane, and one single moment her child was gone. It took a greater love to show her how to go on. And she said, let him without sin cast the first stone. Let the power of love carry you home. Cause for each of my sins, this life he would pay. Yeah, the one thing he taught me is forgiveness is a grace. God says, forgive others as I forgive you. But if you won't forgive, well, can he forgive you? Well, I wanna be forgiven, I wanna be with you. So I'll pray for your strength, and I'll pray for your grace. And I'll pray for your love, it is carrying me through. He was more than a boy, became a fine young man. He never did anyone wrong, and God had this plan for his children held ransom, his son he'd exchange. And as he died on that cross for the sins of me and you, he said, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. So let him without sin cast the first stone. Let the power of love carry you home. Cause for each of my sins, this life he would pay. Yeah, the one thing he taught me, yeah, the one thing he showed me, through him I remember. Yeah, the one thing he taught me is forgiveness is a grace.